from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Blake Topmeyer is the SEC columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. You can always read his work in the Commercial Appeal over at commercialappeal.com. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at B Topmeyer. Blake, did you see the New England Patriots get the full Joe Milton experience in a preseason game?
I saw some highlights. I don't know that I digested the full experience, although there was one scramble that Milton went on that looked looked like the full Joe Milton experience in the span of one play. At times he looked extremely athletic during the scramble run that I saw. At times he looked incredibly awkward. But it seems like you get more details than I do. So
we did have the scramble you're talking about. He had another like gorgeous pass. Now, granted, it's to an open receiver, but like it was he actually like scanned the whole field, found the right guy, hit him perfectly. And then we had somehow Joe needs to trademark this, the 5-yard out that he misses by 10 yards. Like the one where he misses so badly that you're like, I don't really know how you did that. Like, I feel like that is the full Joe Milton experience. Like where you can make the argument, man, if this guy just puts it together, he is the greatest football player we've ever seen. And then you realize like, maybe there's a reason why like his entire career has looked the exact same.
Yeah, and after 6 years of college, I don't know that he's ever going to put it all together. I mean, I think he's at the point where if that would have happened, it would have happened by now. But maybe he should trademark Overthrow Joe. You know,
ooh,
I mean, John
that's
Manziel
better.
Had
that's better, yeah, and that yeah, John, that gets on a T-shirt. That's much better on a T-shirt.
And I'm sure, like at first, he's like, I don't want to be known as Overthrow Joe. But sometimes you got to lean into the joke, right? Make some money off of it. That's how some Tennessee fans know him anyway, as Overthrow Joe. Some Tennessee fans also know him as Bazooka Joe. But I really think Overthrow Joe rolls off the tongue much better, and it helps explain how he's missing those 5-yard out routes. So yeah, just lean into it and become Overthrow Joe. Put it on T-shirts and ball caps.
When we see Nico, is it going to make Joe look better or worse in hindsight when we see a full season of Nico?
It's going to make Joe look worse, but I think what it's really going to make worse,
Josh,
is it's going to look hypo look worse. And I don't know that it really was that bad of a decision, because like when you look at it through the lens of who was the better quarterback in the second half of last season, I think it was Nico. And I think anybody saying it was Milton is doing some lip service for the coaching staff. I'm not saying on September 1 Nico was the better quarterback,
sure,
but the second half of the season, Nico was the better quarterback. But where I say I'm not sure it was actually a mistake, I don't know how many of Tennessee's losses would have been flipped to victories if Nico had been the starting quarterback instead of Milton. I actually don't think any of the results would have been flipped. I mean, you look at the Missouri game, which was maybe the one game that Tennessee thought it would win and lost, but that result doesn't flip with Nico. Like, I mean, unless Nico was going to play middle linebacker and start tackling Cody Schrader during that game, who ran for like 7 zillion yards, Tennessee still loses that game regardless of who the quarterback is. So, you know, from that lens, I don't really think it costs Tennessee anything. But when he goes out there and starts slinging it and is quite clearly a superior player to Milton, which is what I expect to happen, I do think there is going to be some whispers of why wasn't Heupel playing him at the end of last season. And the thing that Heupel probably won't say but maybe believes is, I knew it wouldn't have made a difference in the record. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think it did make a difference in the record, but that's not – coaches just don't say that. But in some ways, I think he would be better off just saying, yeah, in the second half of the year, I knew Nico was a better player, but we decided to ride it out with a veteran and redshirt Nico because I didn't think it was going to affect our win-loss record either way. I think that's probably the truth of it.
I'm with you. Whenever I hear, listen, he was the better quarterback at that point in time, I'm with you. That doesn't have to apply to Joe Milton, to Nico. Like, whenever I just hear that talking point, I always know that that is the coach justification. The one thing I will put stock into, and there's just really no way of knowing because I don't know truly how popular Joe is or isn't in the locker room. I do know that football teams can be very cliquish, and especially when new young guy that's making a ton of money is all of a sudden on the rise. I mean, see the WNBA right now. Like, I do know he might have been afraid. Listen, I don't think it's changing the record. And if it does change the record, I could have a team that gets mad because, you know, they want Joe to play and they quit on me.
Yeah, and I can kind of further that thread because from everything that I know and people I talk to, Milton was incredibly popular with his teammates. So I think you're probably right on that. You bench a sixth-year senior who had been the starting quarterback at the start of the year. And Tennessee was they were a top 25 team. It's not like you'd be benching him because the season became a disaster. The season kind of became what we thought it would be all along. And Milton didn't play horribly. He had, you know, some bad moments, some bad halves, but overall he was, you know, a middle of the pack SEC quarterback last year. So if they would have benched him, I don't know that there would have been a locker room revolt, but I do think that it would have upset some guys in that locker room. And that's less of an indictment on Nico and more of just like, I think guys that had been with Joe for a few years thought that he'd earned that chance. And like I said, he wasn't playing horribly. He was playing okay. And it probably wouldn't have affected the record. So, yeah, I think overall, and that's why it's not as simple as yes or no when this conversation comes up, like, did Heupel mess up? Like, I don't really think he messed up, but I do think he was playing the less good quarterback in the second half of the season. And for some people, it's black and white. Like, you just play the best player at that point in time and be done with it. But I do think that these things are a little bit more nuanced. It wouldn't have changed the record. It might have been an unpopular decision in the locker room, which kind of puts Nico behind the eight ball this year too, right? I mean, if people are still
for sure
a little bit chapped over that change last year, you know, how does that affect the locker room this year? Which the way it went down was a smooth transition, and this was a team that wasn't going to the playoffs last year regardless. So I kind of say no harm, no foul.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, so we have our coaches poll that came out this week. As you being a good company man, do you know what USLBM is? Because I spent like 36 hours, and it took me a long time to figure out. I think it's like a building supply company.
I think it's a lumber company.
Okay.
Of some sort. So yeah, building supply, same vein there. But I was actually kind of horrified right after I published my initial column after the rankings came out because it was only live like this for about 5 minutes. But I initially called it USLMB instead of USLBM.
Yeah, no one could ever make that mistake.
Yeah, I thought, oh no, I'm going to get about 7 emails from company executives here. But fortunately, I caught my error within a few minutes, had it corrected, and no one was the wiser until I made this dramatic reveal to your thousands of listeners here. But I do have it straight now. It's USLBM. And they deal with some sort of lumber or building supplies.
I was stunned to learn that it wasn't a financial service. Like, I feel like anytime you get letters, like letters in the name, it's usually always a financial services package.
Yeah, that's a good point. Also, I see like LBM, and I think like, you know, New York Stock Exchange call letters.
Yep.
I wonder, maybe they are sold on the ticker under LBM. Maybe I ought to be a good company man and look into that.
All right, this is this fascinating thing to me, because I can't tell if we're becoming wiser to the act as sports fans, or if it's the result of we know, hey man, the poll that matters is the one that starts to come out in November. It's the playoff poll. But it has been surprising to me to see something that used to be kind of like a calendar day, which is preseason poll revealed, and you know, we're going to lead SportsCenter with it. Here's the countdown. It did, like, I was kind of proud of us as college football fans. Like, I didn't really see a ton of people, like, getting unnecessarily angry, which is, you know, that's not really normal for us in this sport.
Well, I think there's a few things, and I think part of it is the playoff rankings, but I think it goes much deeper than that. Like, used to be, you'd have these preseason magazines come out in print, and they would offer their top 25, but that's only for people that bought the magazine.
Yeah.
And then everyone was waiting for the release of, you know, the coaches poll and the AP top 25 to for a lot of people, it was their first time seeing a top 25 if they didn't buy a Lindy's or an Athlon or a Phil Steele. Well, now you got top 25 lists in every corner of the internet. Everybody's doing one, and they start about 47 minutes after the national championship game.
47?
Okay, yeah, maybe 47 seconds.
I was going to say, there's some people that definitely hit publish as soon as the game goes final.
Yeah, probably 47 seconds. Yeah. You're probably right. So I think by the time, like, the coaches poll comes out, you're like, wait, haven't I already seen this poll 17 times already? And it's like, no, you haven't actually seen the USLBM coaches poll. You've seen, you know, Athlon's poll and 24/7's poll and ESPN's poll and USA Today's poll that's separate from the USLBM poll. So I think that's part of it too, is just like pre-internet saturation, I think these polls mattered a lot more, not just because we didn't have the playoff rankings, but because people hadn't seen, most people, unless they were holding a copy of Lindy's, or Athlon, they hadn't seen a top 25 probably at any point in the off season, and I think that all points too toward the growing reality that college football is now almost a 365 day a year type of sport in terms of the coverage that it receives, which it didn't used to be that way. It was a very seasonal sport in terms of the way most people covered it.
I did see that you were saying brace yourself for Sankey to quote Sesame Street again. Just a quick little side. Your boy's always been a huge Muppets guy, but now my 11-month-old daughter, she has taken quite the liking to Sesame Street. I mean, it is. I've got the word of the, or sorry, the letter of the day, the number of the day. Also, shout out to whoever. There's some creative genius. You need to look these videos up because they're actually like legitimately hilarious. Some creative genius came up with a segment on Sesame Street in which Cookie Monster and this other Muppet that they brought over from like a British show that they had, they have a food truck and they, like, it's a cooking show and it's electric. Like, it's Cookie Monster having his own cooking show. It's like, that feels like a free space in today's day and age. But just a quick aside, for those that have not gotten caught up on Sesame Street, it's still rolling pretty well.
Well, I'm glad that public funding that PBS receives is going to some good use, not only for you, but now for the next generation that you're raising.
The only shocker was Big Bird's not the host anymore. It's Elmo.
Contract.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I assume Elmo sells more. I assume it's because Elmo sells more units.
That's probably true. My niece carries around Elmo with her pretty much everywhere she goes. I've not seen her carry around a Big Bird yet, but Big Bird was the one that Sankey quoted when he said,
it's true.
One of these things are not like the other. Not, I don't know that Big Bird was the only Sesame Street character to have ever said that, but he was. Big Bird's the one that is associated with most, which was, of course, Sankey's campaign line when he was trying and succeeded in getting Alabama into the playoff last year, making the claim that the SEC is unlike any other conference, and so stand aside 13-0 Florida State. And he succeeded in that claim, and he gained more fuel for that claim, you know, with this preseason coaches poll. Nine SEC teams ranked in the top 25. It's the nine that we would have expected. It's the nine we've talked about on the playoff contention list. And all nine are not only in the top 25, they're in the top 20. But it's less to me, you know, that's the quick reaction. But to me, it's almost less about the number of SEC teams, and then some of the other, but the, some of the other subplots to me are more interesting. Big 12 has no teams in the top 12. Of course, we know they're going to get a minimum of one in the playoff, but I think this goes to show that you might have an auto bid from a Power Four league be ranked like 14th in the polls and be a conference champion and get in the playoffs. So that was one of the things that jumped out at me. No Big 12 teams ranked in the top 12. The other thing is, like, sometimes we talk about the SEC and Big Ten as if they're equals, and I fall into that category too. I often do that. But
equals in power. Maybe not product.
Yeah, equals in power, but not product. I think that's what this poll kind of hammered home. And I don't want to sound like a shill for the conference, for the SEC, because I don't usually drive in that lane. But when you see nine SEC teams ranked in the top 20, and there are six Big Ten teams ranked in the top 25, but just four in the top 20, like, I do still think there's a divide between these two conferences. And really, I think the better place to be is the Big Ten, because I think the Big Ten can get four qualifiers. You know, they're not going to get snubbed by the committee, but it's going to be easier to be among the top four teams in the Big Ten than it is to be in the top four teams in the SEC. I mean, I think if you're Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, Penn State's got a pretty favorable schedule. Those three teams, I think, are sitting pretty good, darn good from the Big Ten, just in their preseason outlook. Cause I think the Big Ten is going to get a minimum of three qualifiers. And I think those three teams are in good shape. Michigan's the one that I'm kind of waffling on, because I think they would be that fourth team from the Big Ten if they get four. But of those four, Michigan plays the toughest schedule, including playing Texas in a non-conference game. So I don't know. I was starting to pencil in four from the Big Ten, but I just don't see a ton of great depth from the conference. And so if Michigan falters, which I think is realistic, you know, I could see the Big Ten only getting three, which would be great news for the Big 12 and the ACC if they're hoping to get two bids.
Yeah, because I'm with you. Part of me wonders, are we overthinking it with Michigan? Like, we know, obviously, they have lost a lot on the offensive end, I would argue. But they're also bringing back a lot. And they're also bringing back almost everyone of significance on defense. And I just wonder if, hey, man, we've kind of started to see you can have a little bit more success now kind of playing the old play unbelievable defense, you know, suck the clock down by running the football. Like, we've seen teams kind of go back to the Saban, you know, boa constrictor formula. Like,
right.
I just wonder, like, man, are we really sleeping on them? Because I know there's going to be two things that they're going to do. They're going to run the football, and they are going to play unbelievable defense.
Yeah, and the defense part I don't worry about so much. With the establishing the run game, they want to do that. That's not going to change. But it's even more so than losing Blake Corum. It's they lost so much from that offensive line, and that unit really powered them in addition to their defense last year. And so, you know, I do think there's a tendency to think of a program like a Michigan and be like, oh, they'll plug and play on the offensive line and everything will be fine. I don't know. It might be okay, but that was a dominant group last year, and they lost a ton up front on offense. So, and I mean, let's face it, they had a cakewalk schedule.
Oh,
last
for
year
sure.
I'm not saying they weren't the best team.
No,
but
no,
like,
their schedule made it so that they really, you know, at the core of their schedule, they knew they were going to be healthy for the most part.
Yeah, and then in the playoffs, they didn't have to play Georgia because Georgia doesn't get in. And so, I mean, like, the whole season was really tailor-made for Michigan to win the national championship, and they won every time out, so they deserve credit for that. But their schedule is kind of 180 this year.
And I would also argue this. I think if Michigan was going to win a national title, they needed it to be a year where the best team didn't have, if not the best quarterback, but like a first-round quarterback. So they wouldn't – I think if they would have gotten into the game – if they would have gotten into the game where they had to just go shot for shot, I think that would have given them problems.
I totally agree. And you know, we have the Harbaugh effect too. Like, you know, first-time coach.
Yep. First-time coach and first-time quarterback.
That's right. So I don't think they're heading off a cliff, but I do think 9-3 is certainly within the realm of possibility. And I think so much of it comes down to the week two game against Texas. I mean, Texas had the very unfortunate injury this year or this week to its top running back, C.J. Baxter. And that, running backs don't mean what they used to, but it does have me kind of reevaluating Texas. Like, I almost had Texas as a shoe-in for the playoff, but I start to look at that week two game between Michigan and Texas, and no, it's not a playoff eliminator, but knowing what lurks on the rest of the schedule for each of those teams, if you were to ask me in week three, I think I would say whoever loses that week two game, I think I lean on them not being a playoff team. I think that game is so important. When we look at September games that are going to have a huge, huge impact on the playoff, I don't think there's a bigger one than Texas and Michigan. Yeah, there is technically room for both of them in the playoff, but I think the path gets really narrow for either team that loses. Now, if you win that game, I think you're sitting in a pretty good spot to, get to at least 10-2. You got that marquee win in week two in the non-conference. I think you'd be in good shape. You lose that game, Texas is on the road at Texas A&M to end the season. They got neutral site with Oklahoma. They have Georgia. It takes a couple more losses and they're out. And then you look at Michigan. They have Ohio State. They have Southern Cal. They have, I think it's either Washington or Oregon or maybe both. They drew one of the tougher schedules in the Big Ten this year. And so that week two game, if they lose at home too, and then that strengthens the reputation of the SEC as a whole and weakens the Big Ten's reputation, that's a critical one for each program. I actually think it's even more important for Michigan because it's a home game than what it is for Texas. I think that'd be really damaging for Michigan to lose that game.
The other side of that question, because this is, I feel like I'm now in peak question everything that I developed over the summer. Am I alone in thinking it's kind of weird that we've gone from never giving Texas the benefit of the doubt to just now it feels like we just blindly give them the benefit of the doubt? And it's like, we did that basically like in 12 months. And by the way, like, it wasn't like they had some perfect season last year. They stubbed their toe against Oklahoma, and then they stubbed their toe against Washington. It's like, now they're in new league. Like, I wonder if we maybe jumped the gun on blindly trusting Texas too much.
Yeah, and I don't know that it all has to do with Texas. I think one game looms so large in the mind when we're trusting Texas. We think back to the win at Bryant-Denny Stadium last year when Texas looked really physically dominant. Alabama was having issues with its offensive line at that point in the season. Jalen Milroe was not the quarterback that he became later in the year. And the scoreboard looked a little closer in that game than I think it actually was. I thought Texas dominated that game really wire to wire. And I think that beating Saban in his house in front of that fan base and just a venue that Alabama loses so infrequently throughout really every year but the first season of the Saban era, I just think that game still looms large in everyone's minds. And it's like, yeah, Texas, bows out in the playoff semifinals. They lost to Oklahoma. But I think if you ask people, just John Q fan, like, why do you trust Texas so much? I think that one of the first things they would go to is, well, they won at Alabama last year in September, and they looked really darn good doing it. And that was almost a year ago, and that was one game. And so, I think you might be on to something to say, like, are we trusting Texas a little too much? And we might be, but I think that's the reason why. I don't even think it's so much that it's Texas and, this has been a sleeping giant. We've been waiting for them to be quote-unquote back. I think that's part of it. But I just think beating Bama in Bryant-Denny, that's the game that still looms large in everybody's minds.
Hey, Blake, this is Phil Stukenborg. I got a question. What kind of intrigue do you envision for the Group of Five team that goes into the playoff? What do you think, what do you feel that will surround that when the time comes?
I think the first round game is going to be really kind of spicy because, that is what, for me, and I think for a lot of people, the Group of Five's entry into the playoff is going to kind of be about, is can they spring a round one upset. I don't think I think it would be a long shot for any group of five program to be able to win back-to-back, to be able to go on the road in a quarterfinal game, or I guess it would be a neutral site game, go to a neutral site and beat what's probably going to be a top four team in round two. But I do think there could be some situations where, you know, they could spring a round one upset, and for a lot of group of five programs, that's going to be kind of the Super Bowl of the season. It's almost like the March Madness effect of the 6 versus 11 games or the 5 versus 12s. Like, you know, I mean, you see some of those teams in NCAA basketball go on long runs and what have you. That's not going to happen in football, but still, by and large, for those underdog teams in the basketball tournament, it's about springing an upset and having kind of the moment of glory. And I think that's what the group of five entry is going to be about in the playoff. It's not whether these teams can go on a deep run and contend for the national championship, because realistically they can't. They're not going to win four straight in a 12-team playoff and capture the crown. But I do think, you know, we think back to those games over the years of Boise State and others winning those BCS bowl games that weren't part of the playoff at that time but were marquee bowl games. Obviously, the landscape of the sport has changed with NIL, but I still think that most of us have the thought in our minds of some of those past upset wins. And we think, hey, now in a playoff format, you could see it happen. And, you know, obviously Memphis is going to be a team contending for that group of five spot, which is just, I think it's one of the best things about the 12-team playoff to me is that, at least for now, there is a seat at the table for the group of five. And again, it's not about winning the national championship the way I look at it. It's having a seat at the table, having a chance to make some noise in the playoff, even if that is just one upset.
Well, you know, you think about it, I think we all assume, or maybe presume, the G5 team is going to be the 12 seed. But if they upset the five and the situation plays out like you and I both believe it's going to, which is the Big 12 team is going to be the four. That could be like 9-4 Big 12 team.
Oh my.
You know what I mean? Like now, granted, if that G5 team won the second game, the quarterfinal, I don't care what the number is. I'm laying it in the semifinal. Like I will go and look for every alternate line on the planet. But like that is kind of where you can get the 2 week run that we're talking about, that special, because in the end, I feel like it's all going to come about matchups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 12 seed in a way could be kind of this sneaky good seed to have in the playoff. I mean, yeah, you're a bigger underdog in your first round game, but if somehow you spring the first round upset, then you're better positioned for round two. So, yeah, I mean, I think it would be pretty unlikely that we'd see the G5 team win two. To win three in a row, I think we're slipping to the point of maybe once in your lifetime if they were to keep this format in perpetuity, which they won't. But yeah, I mean, not only that though, I think the race for that bid during the regular season is going to be really controversial and really interesting. You know, for these Power Four conferences, some of the intrigue goes away, and it's like, okay, watch the conference championship game if you're a fan of the Big 12 or the ACC, and there's your auto bid, and maybe you get one more, maybe you don't, but that takes a little bit of the mystery away. With the group of five, there's no guarantee that it's going to be your conference that gets the bid. I mean, you know, we would think the American has the inside edge to the group of five's bid, but that's not a guarantee. And so, you know, I think week to week, that's going to be one of the more interesting things about the playoff rankings. We used to focus so much on who's four, who's five, and who's six in the four-team format. And now there's going to be a lot of focus on, you know, who's 9, 10, 11, 12 for the at-large conversations in the 12-team playoff. But one of the more interesting things every week in these rankings is going to be, how is the best team from, say, the American ranked in comparison to the best team from, say, the Mountain West, knowing that there's almost certainly only going to be one spot for those two conferences. And so it's not just about winning your own conference. It's about looking good in the non-conference. And really at every opportunity possible, you know, showing that you are the best G5 conference in the land. And that doesn't mean you just have the best team in the conference, but I think overall conference depth helps your argument as you're trying to get the lone G5 spot here. So I think that's one part of the playoff and the playoff rankings that doesn't seem to be getting a lot of buzz, at least in the world I operate in. But I do think it's going to be one of the more interesting things is, like, you know, the arguments between, Memphis fans versus, say, Boise State fans about whether the American or the Mountain West is a stronger conference and which of those two conferences should secure the bid. That's going to be one of the more fun, more controversial, more interesting parts, I think, about the 12-team playoff, even though we know in the end, once you get to the Final Four, it's not going to include any of those Group of Five programs.
We'll wrap here. My buddy Tim Murray joins us on Tuesday, and the same argument that you're having, like, to me, like, I think it's going to be as simple as this. Like, if it's going to be Memphis or Boise, it's which one gets ranked first. Because it feels to me like, you know, we always act like there's no such thing as, you know, recency bias, but it's like, if one of those teams gets ranked first and stays there, like, they kind of have the inside track. But we were laughing at this scenario. Even though none of us actually believe it's going to happen, Boise gets Oregon week two. And if they pulled off that upset, Memphis gets Florida State week three. The odds of both teams going a collective 13-0 are not great. But if that did happen, that would be fascinating, because at a certain point, it feels like they're going to have to both get in. And I feel like if that were the case, there would be no, we're waiting to get, just finish out this contract. I feel like Sankey and Petiti at that point the next day would be like, all right, let's do it. Here's the merger. We're going, we can't have this happen again.
And yet somehow I feel like if both teams went 13-0,
one of them gets left out.
Yeah, well, logically, we're sitting here saying, like, you got to put them both in. And yet we've seen this play out time and again over the years. And it's like, I actually think only one would get in, which I think would be, you know, incredibly unfair. But you talk about those non-conference opportunities, and I do think that's an opportunity for the Big 12 the American or the Mountain West to separate itself from each other. And I think you're right about, like, whoever gets ranked first has an obvious inside edge. The other thing I will say, though, is when it comes to conference championship weekend, I think there will be a lot, you know, the committee is going to be paying a lot of attention on whatever the top two or three G5 conferences are on their conference championships. And so I think having a stronger number two team in the conference, if you're close in the rankings, I think that could maybe help give you a little late season bump. Like, say the number two team in the conference is really strong from the league, is maybe like 11-1 going into the conference championship, and the second best team from the Mountain West is 8-4.
Yeah.
You know, could that give you a little bump? I think, you know, if you're close, if I guess what I'm saying is, if Boise and Memphis are close in the rankings going to conference championship weekends, having a better opponent in the conference championship game, I think, then becomes an advantage. Because if you're just looking to climb a couple spots, if that's all you need to pass the other G5 team, that can help you, you know, playing that stronger team in the conference championship game. And I think the committee could look at that a little bit.
Well, I think stronger team or just stronger performance, because, like, in the end, like, they can deny it all they want. The big problem that Florida State had was how inept they looked on offense. And even though I could make the argument, the fact that they won a game with their third team quarterback and really did not have the option to pass the football, that in itself is, that's part of football. But look at what they did with Washington, because they beat, the fashion they beat Oregon. You know what I mean? Like, we went from thinking, like, Washington, okay, like, they're not even in this, like, to, they just put them at, they put them at two.
Yeah, it became a fashion show at the end, and it became a Big Bird rhetoric contest at the end as well. Those are the two factors going against Florida State: beauty and rhetoric.
All right, buddy, have a great weekend.
Yep, you too. Thank you.
That is Blake Topmeyer, USA Today SEC columnist.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.